Welcome to episode 180 of the Atomic Powered Supercast with your hosts Andrew, David, Jen, and Nick. This week we read Ecstatics, Good Omens by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred. And now, the cast begins.
Legion is super futuristic, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you're super futuristic, and you can create anything that your mind can imagine, and you create a crossbow, you don't really deserve to be a Green Lantern.
It's old school. I mean, they just make, half of the time, they just make fists. Like,
well, but it's not, the crossbow, like boxes. The crossbow is can be used with other Green Lanterns in the game. Like, Hal Jordan just comes with a shield.
Yeah.
Okay, in-game, it makes perfect sense. But in comic, it's like, why not? I don't know.
Well, yeah, I mean, Hal Jordan makes things like jets, and John, yeah. And in Blackest Night, John Stewart makes an entire, like, army out of with constructs.
No, it's cool. I got this crossbow, guys. I'm using my imagination.
Hey, man, don't fix my broke.
Wasn't that the entire idea of Kyle? No, yeah, Kyle Rayner, that's his name. He was a graphic designer, so he's like, I should be able to come up with cool stuff.
Yeah, he did. He came up with a lot of awesome stuff.
But Ron Vidar is not he's not Kyle Rayner.
Maybe he's an historian.
That's it. He's a medievalologist.
Yes. Yeah.
He's a LARPer.
Perfect. Continuity, headcanon, complete.
There we go.
I don't even want to read this one now. I just want to imagine it.
Well, we already came up with better, because David said he was from the Legion. So I already know we came up with better.
Aren't they on, like, 9 different reboots of Legion?
Yeah.
That's about right, yeah.
They keep rebooting it, because apparently it's a fan favorite, but I don't know who those fans are, because they don't buy the comic.
Yeah, they reboot it, and it goes away after, like, 10 issues.
It's like, at least Marvel realized with 2099, it's like, oh, no one likes this? All right, let us never speak of it again.
Well, Spider-Man 2099 pops up every once in a while.
Didn't that one end with Doom 2099 just winning and destroying the world?
Possibly. I don't know.
I don't remember.
Well, there you go. There's your next. No.
It's funny, the thing with Legion of Superheroes, like, They made a set. They made a HeroClix set called Superman and the Legion of Superheroes. And it doesn't actually have a Superman figure in the set.
Just so they could use the name?
Probably. But what's funny is the Legion, like, pieces, game pieces, are actually really good. I like using them. But the comic's not good.
Well, you got guys like, what's it, Matter Eating Lad, Karate Kid... Who else can I remember?
Well, there's Bouncing Boy.
Bouncing Boy. It's like, yeah.
There's a character from one of the more recent reboots called Earthman.
What are his powers? His power to have dirt all over him?
No, I think it's because he's a human. He's like a regular human. He's racist. Seriously.
All right, that's kind of funny.
He's like a racist superhero.
What's your power? White power!
His power is he has super absorption and duplication, but in the most recent reboot he actually becomes a Green Lantern. So he has Green Lantern powers plus he can absorb other things. His super absorption. It says super power absorption, not super absorption.
Oh, okay.
He's like the ultimate sponge.
We have a flood. What are you gonna do? I'll solve it.
Absorb powers. But yeah, he's super racist.
I can't say if that's commentary or just laziness.
Speaking of lazy racism, you guys ready to record?
Sure.
Please tell me it's going to be a racist episode.
No, I think we've actually done that one already. Okay, I got a good one. You guys ready?
Staticky?
Better.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another clingy episode of the Atomic Powered Supercast. My name is Andy, and I'm hanging out with David.
Hey.
And Jen.
Hey.
And Nick.
I'm full of tinier men. If I can't work it, take out. Yeah. That just makes me happy.
You know, Andy.
I'm glad David got the clingy.
Well, it works on multiple levels.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a static thing, right? Because they're the ecstatics.
I get it.
And it's the orphan thing.
He's very clingy. Yeah. And then Arnie's kind of clingy.
Arnie is more than kind of clingy.
Yeah, but I think to be clingy, you have to, like, be in a relationship with the person.
You have to actually be able to cling on to them physically in some way.
He's unable to cling.
She loved him.
His static cling is weak.
I don't know what you're talking about. She wrote him a message.
No, it was she recorded it. It was like, you know how you win a contest and then you can get a celebrity to like record your voicemail message?
Or he put a lot in on a Kickstarter.
Yeah, it's like the Reading Rainbow Kickstarter.
He kickstarted her new her newest movie.
You Go Girl Mars.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, yeah. This week we read Ecstatics, Good Omens, Collecting Ecstatics 1-5 by Peter Milligan and Mike Allred.
They're finally staticky. They're no longer forceful.
That might be the best summary I've ever heard, actually.
When I saw the Ecstatics, I was like, what does this even fucking mean? And then somebody in the comic thankfully said, what does this even fucking mean?
And they just do it to make Guy happy, essentially just to shut him up. It's like, here, there you go. Have a little name. It's what the last episode of X-Force is actually named. They were supposed to be named X-Storm, which admittedly is a terrible name, so Guy did them a favor. Yeah.
Well, I think it's because Guy is so ecstatic to be a superhero.
Well, it's just what Edie said before she died. But yeah, I mean, it's that thing. It's kind of one of those things. Although, when you think about it,
What you're saying is
he's happy that she's dead.
Well, it was a Padme Revenge of the Sith moment.
Oh God.
Oh
no, not that part, Andy. The
no?
Luke, Leia, that
the
part,
and then scene.
Ecstatics.
Yeah.
So you could say, to paraphrase Obi-Wan, You Go Girl gave birth to the ecstatics from a certain point of view. Oh, I'm sorry. We got off on a tangent real quick.
That's fine.
That happened.
Remember, hey, you remember last. Please tell me you kept in that whole run of tonight on This American Life.
Oh, I haven't edited that one yet, so probably. Now I have to because we mentioned it twice.
Ha ha! That's my secret strategy. I'm just going to keep on doing that.
Yeah, Nick made a callback, so you got to deliver,
yeah,
Andy.
Now it's just going to be funny for our dedicated listeners.
Yeah.
The ones who write in all the time and post on our Facebook.
I'll tell you right, I was thinking when you introduced me of introducing myself as Marco Werman from The World, but I thought that might be
too lame. Oh, I should have done Ira Glass, son of a bitch.
No, never again. What were we saying? Oh, yeah, no, so actually I was going to say one thing about the name. Because as I said, so I was introduced to this about a year after it ended? I don't remember. I was playing Versus, and they created an ecstatic set, and someone explained the whole deal to me. I was like, well, I better go read all this. And so I had no idea what the name was about, and I was actually super confused, because, you know, it starts off as X-Force, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what they explained it to me, going into it, is, hey, if you were a mutant, right, and you have all these powers, and you're super rich and famous, you'd be pretty happy. And I was like, yeah, yeah. And they're like, would you say you might be a little ecstatic? And that's how the name was described to me. I don't know. And having read this now a couple of times, I'm like, nah, I think he was just fucking with me.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, sounds like it.
But
yeah.
I like that as my headcanon. If you were a mutant, wouldn't you be happy?
No.
I mean, it's better. It's better than O Force, which is just a complete ripoff. I don't even know what the O is supposed to stand for.
Wasn't it
original? I don't know.
O stuff.
Well, the guy's name is something, Solomon O'Sullivan.
Oh, yeah,
that's right. Hey, he named him after himself.
Saying, oh, yeah. No, okay, and that makes plenty of sense now. Sullivan, what was his name? Sullivan O'Sullivan.
Solomon O'Sullivan.
That's correct. Which, I don't really see the point of him. I never did, but whatever. He gets the stuff. He's a MacGuffin, a walking MacGuffin, so you add Scottish into his Irish and Jewish ancestry there.
I do like, though, that they brought that on, because the idea of X-Force and Ecstatic is that they're a team that's like the, what is it, reality television team, right? Just thrown together, and there's all this emphasis on marketing and sales and all that kind of stuff, and it feels really artificial. So they give you O-Force, which is 100% artificial, and I like that their fan favorite just runs off in the middle of the fight.
Yeah.
To leave one of them to die very gruesomely.
After getting her fucking legs blown off. Yeah. I'm like, yeah, okay, that's what happened.
Well, it's one of those sort of reality ensues kind of moments where it's like, hey, we created this team. They're going to be fantastic, right? Sure. Let's see what happens. Oh, God. Oh, that was a bad idea.
It's a wonderful direct correlation to X-Force, because in X-Force we get the one where they have to go in. It's staged. They save the boy band. It's exactly the same thing. It's like a one-to-one parallel.
And hey, go figure. It was in number 2. Never mind. I was going to say, if they started X-Force 1 the way they did that. Damn it. That would have been so perfect. We should go back in time and tell them to make that the first issue.
But it makes you wonder what's different then between O-Force and X-Statix in terms of what makes... maybe it's because not all of O-Force died?
Well, honestly, you know, just luck when you get right down to it. I mean, that's a pretty good point, because think about it. How many of them died in the first issue, in the second issue, in the third issue? I mean, eventually what happens is they just kind of learn by doing. And it's kind of like when you played, I don't know if you played XCOM, but it's kind of like that. You create your nice little squad, and then eventually enough of them survive to become actually useful.
I love XCOM.
XCOM? X-Statix. I'm just saying, they both start with an X. I don't think that's a coincidence.
Well, they're X-awesome.
Are they? Maybe the awesome XCOM are mutants? Just putting it out there.
It could be.
So after three trades of X-Force / X-Statix, I'm going to try and steer this conversation. After three trades, have any of your guys' favorite characters changed or been reshaped? Because I've got to say, I like Anarchist even more now. Every trade, I just buy in more. I like that he was like, team's falling apart. Fuck it, I'm going on tour with a giant boa around my neck.
That was pretty excellent, yes.
And he's like, watch Denver die! Boom! Yep.
As of the show, just watch her get... We're just going to kill her in a bunch of different ways. Because, well, it's not like he can kill himself.
Yeah.
I kind of wonder what he brought to that road show. Hey, guys, I'm going to sweat all over you and burn your skin off?
Well, I think there was a scene where they had him, like, blowing something up. I think there was, like, a panel where he was out on stage.
Oh, yeah, zapping stuff.
He was, like, shooting something.
He could probably... I mean, he could zap her.
Yeah, could that be kind
I'm
of
sure fun. He did once or twice, if you know what I'm saying.
Heyo! I feel like Nick and I should just have a podcast where we quip at each other.
I'd listen.
If you want to record it, I'll publish it.
That was essentially last week when you think about it.
Yeah.
As I said last week, I retconned, so technically no. I've said Dead Girl all 3 weeks in a row. She just grows on you more and more and more, and it really is a shame that we're stopping where we are, because she gets even more and more insane as things go along. Eventually, when they fight the Avengers, she's the only one to actually succeed in their little task.
Because they can't kill her.
Pretty much. Actually, that's pretty much it. She's racing through, like, I don't know, acid or something. It's like, well, I'm just gonna keep regenerating, so see you guys later.
Nice.
Makes sense in context. Yeah.
So, what about David Jen? Have you guys...
Mine changed.
Yeah? Who is it now?
The first episode, I was like, oh, Mr. Sensitive seems okay. He's the only one who's not, like, a total shit. Yeah, that's not the case.
Yeah.
And now it's kind of like, hey, just stop it, man. Like, he's kind of... Like, he doesn't annoy me, but he's certainly not meant to be likable.
Oh, he annoys me now.
Oh, no. Yeah.
Yeah. He goes to a dark place.
And I kind of get it. Like, he's having some kind of breakdown, but I don't enjoy reading it. I really like Vivisector and Fat these days. Those guys are great. And Vivisector's quips I really enjoy, probably because I am also pretentious. But, oh, man, he's just... Yeah.
My favorite part of those are how their bromance is shaped into each other. Vivisector will say something intelligently, and then Fat will say the exact same thing, just dumbed down.
Yeah.
Like, panel for panel, every single time, that's what happens. It's wonderful. It's like a translation.
He puts it into the language that the audience is going to understand.
Yeah.
And then adds yo.
Yo.
Yo! Yeah.
What about you, David?
I think I said my favorite character was also the orphan. So... You know, I agree with Jen. He's kind of become... Well, he's grown into the terrible person we all knew that he could be. But I feel like he's more he's more interesting now.
Mm. Yeah, he has a little bit more depth.
I mean, he was interesting initially from his introduction, but now even more so because... Yeah, like what you said, Andy. Depth. He has a lot more depth now. And he's really embraced the role of leader. I think towards the end, probably in issue 4 or 5, somebody tells him that being the leader of X-Statix is like all he has left. Because he says he wants to, Lacuna says it right before he's quitting the team.
Yeah.
And I even though he, as far as we know, like at the end of issue 5, he has quit. I think she's right in that this is who he is now. He's the leader of this team. And I mean, we see it when they go to fight Arnie, that he is able to bring them together.
Yeah. So. Well, I mean, it makes sense if you think about it, because what else could he possibly do? Like, I mean, there's just nothing for him. He has to wear that suit just so he can function. I mean, what's he going to do, become like a fry cook or something? I mean, he can't do anything after this. And it's the, you saw in the, I think, like the second or third issue of the whole shebang, he just lives in a normal house. Like, yeah. I mean, and now all of a sudden he has this place on Malibu. He's the most famous mutant alive. Well, in canon, whatever. I feel like Wolverine's slightly more famous, but just a little bit. He is in every single comic. But, I mean, he's the most famous person alive. He's just kind of like, well, I'm done. I'll see you guys later. Pack it in. There's only one way out of X-Force or X-Statics in a body bag.
Yeah, and I really feel like him diving in to the situation with Arnie, I mean, there's a little bit of bravery involved there. But really, I think he also kind of realized on a certain level that this isn't something his team was going to be able to solve. They weren't going to fight their way out of it. I mean, all you have to do is look at what happened to O-Force and you realize it wouldn't have mattered who he brought along.
Yeah.
It wouldn't have mattered at all.
Arnie was just too strong. I mean, the fact that he can pretty much do anything he can think of. Like, they're kind of just lucky that, oh, thank God he's a fan. Yeah. Thank God he actually likes us.
Well, and the thing Arnie really needed to do was talk to the orphan. That's really what he needed to do to work through his shit. But, like, I mean, having our anarchist there wouldn't help or hurt in any way. Well, probably
but it would
hurt.
Make it a lot more interesting.
Yeah, that's true.
It would have made it a lot more extreme. You'd have had extreme ecstatics right there in issue number 4.
Well, that shows something about his character. But I feel like the biggest development we get for Orphan is the stuff with him and Venus de Milo. Like, I especially like the interaction with, like, you get the whole part where he's trying to come up with reasons for her to not join the team, right? And then she teleports him to where she killed her family, and she has that conversation, and she says, I'm giving you every reason you need.
Yeah.
And then, as it progresses, he shows that he really is the leader, and he won't be able to give it up, because when the contract comes and says, whether you like it or not, no matter what excuse you want to come up with, she literally is contractually banned from doing anything on your team. He rips up the contract, which is, you know, stupid, because it's
copy. Yeah, it's not going to do anything. but it's dramatic.
It's dramatic, and it shows his intent, and it shows that, like, it shows that he's been able to grow beyond a lot of things, even though I really do think when he took her out to dinner, I think it was dinner or lunch or something.
Yeah.
But when he took her out, he was being mean.
Yeah.
He was being, Venus, you want to join the team, huh? This is the kind of shit you're in for. Get ready for it. And it's like, you don't have to do that. You could just tell her. You don't have to throw her to the wolves. There's no need for baptism by fire. And of all the of all the people that you would expect to on this team to do that to somebody, it wouldn't be the orphan. I would expect the anarchist to do it.
Like, he'd do it for the lulz.
Yeah, he would do it for the lulz in a second, but Orphan is doing it because he is vengeful and petty.
Well, it always struck smacked of, in the first couple of issues, she just seems so perfect, and that's what he can't deal with.
Yeah.
Like, she's so fantastic, and so he only really starts to like her once he finds out, oh, you're just as screwed up as the rest of us.
Yeah.
You killed your entire family.
Yeah.
Or so you believe.
Well, and then even later, when he sees that she's really just a blob of matter.
Yeah.
In, like, an egg tank thing.
Yeah.
Like, even that, I think that's the moment when he's sold. Like, to realize that, I mean, the idea that the suit was containing her was one thing, but to actually see it is another.
Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a pretty good point. I hadn't thought of that. God damn it, stop making me think.
Yeah!
That's what this podcast is all about.
We like to inject intellectualism into things that have no business being intellectual.
You know, actually, that's the thing that surprised me. This is, I think it gets short shrift because there are a lot of really good, I think this is kind of like the Saints Row of comics, because there are a lot of really good jokes in here, but they also have, it's actually kind of, underneath all of it, it's actually kind of, actually means something in a way.
And there's a lot of stuff here that happens organically that shouldn't be part of a discussion, but because this is done organically, it is part of the discussion. Kind of like keeping the same parallel, like in Saints Row, how you can make a male or female character and it doesn't change the story one iota, which kind of flies in the face of everything every other video company says, that it, like, doubles the work or it's so much more work to create a female character. Saints Row is like, no, just make the same game. Don't change a single thing. Just romance everybody. Who gives a shit? You want to be gay, trans, bi, I don't care. Play the damn game. And, I mean, this comic does similar stuff with, like, Fat and Vivisector, where it, like, that is something that would happen to kids their age, too, you know? Like, thrust into the limelight. They have to confront the fact that they have these feelings. And, like, from what I know about gay culture and when gay people, like, realize that they swing that way, that it, like, there is that moment of, like, you kind of attach to the person because the person makes you realize, but then you realize it's not really the person that's making you realize, it's just that you're becoming aware of the fact.
Yeah, like, that's, as I said, I alluded to the first time and then just straight up said last time, these are my favorite this is my favorite relationship that I've read in a comic, straight or gay, partly because it doesn't work out. I mean, that's the thing, it's like they realize, oh, we're not actually attracted to one another. Like I said, like, any video game, whatever, it's got a gay character. It's like, well, we want to put a romance thing in there, so we'll put exactly one other character with the same orientation, and go figure that they just get together. It's like, well, what if one of them's like, I like, I don't know, Bob Dylan. Well, I like Wu-Tang Clan.
Or like Fat, who's into the black guys.
Exactly. Yeah, he's like, well, Vivisector, you know, that's the thing I always thought. Vivisector, when he's in wolf form, could probably still work for Fat.
Yeah.
He's a little African in
well,
that.
I mean, that's more bestiality, right?
Yeah.
Well, Fat's not smart enough for Vivisector either.
Yeah, that's true.
Give him a list of words. Top
I mean,
nerdy thing.
It's such a you're right, it's like such a common thing, because no matter who you are, like, unless you somehow make it like the very first relationship you ever have, you know, you meet people and you date them and you say, like, you know, this isn't working out for whatever reason, and like this happens to everybody, so it's nice that they just have like a completely normal like start and then end to their relationship. Instead of being, like, tokens.
Yeah, I mean, the only thing that makes this any different from any other relationship in comics is the fact that they are gay. Like, this isn't that different from a relationship that Kyle Rayner gets during his solo run. He likes a chick because they kind of do the same thing. And then they realize that they are just sleeping with each other because they spend a lot of time together. And they would actually be better if they were just friends. So aww. They just break up.
Well,
and it's
well,
like, this is no different than that, other than that these two are gay. So it feels completely organic, and it's really
well,
nice to read that.
Werewolf.
Well, I think part of the reason why it feels so organic, too, is that it's their character isn't about that the fact that they're gay.
Yeah.
That's just, I mean, that is part of their growth as people within the comic is coming to understand themselves and all that kind of stuff. But that's not what they're about. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. As compared to, what was his name? Bloke?
Bloke? Well, see,
But, I mean, we got, like, a page on Bloke.
Yeah. And it was basically just a press release, too. I mean, that's also part of it. Because when a new character is introduced to the X-Force universe or whatever, onto the show, and this time I'm saying show on purpose, when a new character is introduced on the show, you've got to give them, like, your instant, this is why you should care about this person, because they're probably not going to live very long. But then, as they survive more and more and more missions, you actually get a chance to learn who they are, and now you kind of care about them a little bit more organically.
So what do we all think about Venus de Milo? Because it's interesting that she might be the longest running character in this comic at this point, even though this is the first time we see her. Because I think, isn't she brought up in like the very first issue almost?
Yeah, they're like, who's going to replace? And then I feel like they were just naming names, like coming up with names. And someone said Venus de Milo as a joke. And then they're like, why not make that into a real character? And if you note, her power is that she has no arms. Amongst other things, but still.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was like a good 10, 15 issues before she actually even came in. Like, they say her name and then just wait.
So what did you all think about her as a character and a person?
She's probably the most sane person there.
Yeah, easily.
Except it was really weird that she had to have this, like, horrible, fucked up past. Like, I kind of expected her to just be a normal person, and I'm not sure that I actually like that they're trying to be like, oh, she's dramatic. And I think earlier Nick dropped a bit of a spoiler.
I do that a lot.
Right? But no,
Ned
like
Stark dies, by the way.
No, it's like it would be better if she was just a perfectly normal person, because those exist too, and none of them are in this comic.
But I think
we'll see. But see, like, I think I'm okay with that. Sorry, Andy, to cut you
off.
No, I'm
going
to take this.
I think we're going to say the same thing, so go on.
I think the reason why I'm okay with the fact that she has a messed up past is, you know, in the context of this comic, you know, everybody kind of has a fucked up past or or, you know, everybody's got pretty big issues. But in the grand scheme of Marvel Comics, like, there's lots of mutants who had problems, similar problems to her, you know? And so, if you think of it in the grand scheme of comics, you know, the Marvel 616, it's not that out of the ordinary. And it allows her to relate to Orphan. Is it kind of convenient? Yeah. But I think it's okay. You know, I don't have a problem with it.
Yeah. I mean, some people you can tell right away are mutants. Like, I imagine they knew Yugo Girl was a mutant. Well, no, they didn't. They were dumb. But I mean, if you come out of the womb with a different skin color, you can tell something's off. And you, in this universe, I would imagine, think, oh shit, maybe I gave birth to a mutant. Or you'd be like, yeah, maybe I gave birth to a mutant. I don't know what your reaction would be. It's a personal thing. I'm not going to judge. But most of the time, you don't know until the power kind of activates or presents itself. And that happens at completely random times, and you don't know what the power is going to be. Like, even though it was just movie continuity, I don't know what it's like in the comic continuity, but the X-Men movie, where you see Rogue when her power manifests, she's making out with a dude and almost fucking kills him. And
that was like, comic continuity, too.
Is that comic continuity? Yeah. Like, that, like, you don't know, man. And so, I mean, for Venus de Milo, it's like, the way she dropped it in the beginning, it was like, oh, she murdered them. But no, it was completely accidental. Her powers manifested out of nowhere, went from 0 to 11, and couldn't control it, and killed everyone. And everything else that she describes about her life is because of that event. And I think they stack those things on her, not necessarily to make her fucked up or make her abnormal so she fits in with a team. I think it shows that she is normal, because an abnormal person would shrug it off. An abnormal person would have killed their family and go, oh, I guess I need to join X-Force. You know, like, but a normal person, if that happens to them, if they accidentally kill their family, are going to have serious issues with trauma and therapy and all kinds of things. And sure. She does. I think it makes her more normal.
And I do appreciate the fact that she did say that she was, like, really fucked up after it. It's just kind of like, you know, I noticed in this one they retconned Fat's background.
Yeah, I was never too clear on that, because, I mean, since everything is, I mean, you're correct, it seemed like they did, but then I always wondered, like, are they maybe just acting it out also? Or have they just bought into the hype and, like, we're hillbillies now, why not? I don't know. I mean, it's a very open question. It's pretty much the only time Fat gets any love in the book. But beyond that, I mean, he's got that one scene when you think he's about to die back on the ship. And so there really is just no closure on it.
Yeah, I don't recall when they did that panel of him saying goodbye to his family. Was he, like, leaving their house, like a condo or something? Or were they maybe at a hotel?
It was, like, apartments, I think. Because he was like, I'm sorry, I have to pretend you're not middle class.
Yeah, I remember that, but I don't remember where he said it. But even then, like, these people are clearly not the same people.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess the way I meant to tie that in was, you know, it seemed like Fat was the only person who came from a background without weird family drama.
And, so they gave him some.
Yeah. And,
they got to make it more interesting.
I'd also have been fine if Venus de Milo, like, had never killed her family and had a good relationship with them or something, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, if that had been the case, we probably would not have, it probably would not have been any kind of talking point at all. And you know, like you said, it's okay if that was the case, but, you know, I think it's okay that it goes the other way, too.
You know, from my perspective, the person in this that has the most normal, unfucked up life...
Our anarchist?
No, it's Lacuna.
Oh, yeah, no, that's true.
Okay.
I mean, there's different kinds of fucked up and not normal in her upbringing, too, but, like, so far as I can tell, I mean, from what I grew up as a white man in California, I mean, that's the most normal of everybody here.
And she's happy. I mean, she does the normal teenage, like, I want to disappoint my parents, but and aside from that...
She has the perspective to not join X-Force when she sees what they really are.
Yeah.
Which is a whole other gift, really.
Why end up dying when I could just make a bunch of money?
And have fun doing it. And do the thing that you always really wanted to do. Disappoint your parents.
Oh, yes, that too. I always thought her show was a little creepy if you think about it, like all the legal aspects of that. Like, we're just going to...
It's super creepy. It's, hey, let's be a stalker.
That's the greatest power of all. Yeah. Actually, I was a little disappointed. She only shows up a couple more times. But she still exists in canon. She's just never been seen since. So somewhere out there, under the pale moonlight, we could see a Lacuna in the future.
Oh, she might show up in the dupe comic.
Oh, that'd be fantastic. You know, that's actually the thing, not to get too far off topic, but that's the thing that's I mean, I still love the Dupe comic, but they haven't mentioned X-Statics in it at all. Like, yeah, I'm just waiting for something in the background at the very least, like, I don't know, an orphan helmet or something like
some
that.
Some merchandise, even.
Yeah! Give me some merchandise. I would totally buy. I mean, maybe you know, 10 years after this thing's been canceled, the merchandise isn't gonna go flying off the shelves. But I would buy something if I could find it.
So, what are Dupe's powers in the Dupe ongoing? Not to derail it too much, because it seems like here his power is just floating around and being like a buffer.
Actually, that's essentially it, and it ties into this one because it makes a little bit more sense. Is his powers? They call him a marginista. He can travel between pages of comics. And just be wherever he needs to be to watch whatever he needs to watch. So whenever there's something important going on in X-Force X-Statics, there he is cranking his little camera.
Huh. Isn't he like super durable and stuff too?
Probably. You don't survive that many missions without a couple scars. I know he has two brains, although one only has a 3-day charge.
Although I do want to say I really want to get the Dupe translator after this comic, because in this comic he's much more interactive.
Yeah, I translated everything he said.
Did you?
Did you really?
What was the joke that he said?
Oh, about the corkscrew?
Yeah.
It was something like...
Because that's the one that made me think, oh, I really want to look this up, because...
It wasn't that funny. I can barely remember it. It was something like, it depends which way he corkscrews you. Something like that. I don't know.
See, that's the thing. That's why I have not. I've always wanted to. I've always thought. And now that I have these here instead of friends' loaned copies, I can do it. But at the same time, like, you know, if I do it, isn't that going to kind of just kill the mystery? Like, it's never as good as what you imagine in your head.
Yeah.
And so I'm kind of like, I want to, but I don't. You know,
like the one where they say Venus Delightful.
Yeah.
Sounds like an ice cream. What he says right before. The orphan says that is Venus Delightful sounds like an ice cream. Just like literally that. So, you know, I will say it gets
so
easier.
Stole Dupe's joke.
Yeah, he just repeated
Carlos
it.
Carlos Mencia.
It gets easier to translate the Dupe stuff like after you've done three of them because it's actually really, really easy to read. Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a different font. It's I don't remember the name of it, but it's essentially Wingdings. When you get right down to it.
Oh, yeah. I should download it and do a post in Dupe.
Ooh.
I wonder if I could download the font case.
That'd be cool.
Yeah. You can always draw it out. It's just squiggles and lines. Of course, I guess that's every language when you get right down to it.
Yeah, but I mean, he was a character that the last 2 weeks I've been kind of pitying because he'd say things and people would just kind of ignore him. But this week, he's kind of transitioned away from pity into like that R2-D2 rule where it's like, oh, just Luke and everybody responds to him like it's no big deal. And you have no idea what the fuck he's saying. But it makes him lovable in a certain kind of way.
I kind of wish I hadn't translated because it's just all like small talk.
Mm.
So it would have been a lot more fun if I had kept it to what I was imagining.
It kills the romance.
Hey, Nick, at the end of the first Dupe, the first issue of the Dupe ongoing, he starts speaking English, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Oh.
He speaks English. So the backup brain that he has slows down his speech pattern so he can speak English again. Because why not? No, so he apparently, like, that's when you got I think the Lacuna bit in the beginning when he's just watching as she freezes time more or less sums it up perfectly. He can speak English. He can understand English. He can do whatever he wants. He just doesn't give a fuck. He does not care what's going on. If they ignore him, it's like, whatever.
So let's talk about the resolution of the Arnie storyline. Because the whole Arnie thing I thought was kind of neat. Because they set him up as this obsessive guy, and there's not really a way to beat him. And I think Orphan sees it, and all of that stuff goes down just the way you would think, right? Like Orphan kind of comes in, and the only way that you could solve a problem with a mutant that powerful is to talk to them. Because really, he can do whatever the fuck he wants. So there's no way you're fighting your way into beating Arnie. But what I wasn't seeing coming was when Arnie joined the team.
And they didn't even Orphan didn't want him at first. He's like, I'm just going to pack you off to Professor X.
Yeah, that's what he did.
And you're good to go. Yeah.
But he ends up the next issue as part of the team. I was like, oh, the fuck?
With what might be one of the most brilliant names ever, the Mysterious Fanboy. Like, nobody's going to notice, like, because that's the thing I always thought was kind of hysterical, was, you know, half his face is all fucked up, And he's a pimply faced 14-year-old, if even that. And then all of a sudden, this brand new mutant appears. He's wearing half of a mask. He's a pimply faced 14-year-old, and no one's going to figure it out.
I know, they couldn't even get a full head mask.
In a world where Clark Kent disguises himself with glasses, Arnie's costume is pretty substantial.
Let's be fair, though. That's DC, and DC is populated by absolute morons.
Aww.
You heard Andy's feelings.
He manipulates. There's a reason why people don't recognize Clark Kent. It doesn't work in live action. It does work in comics. That's the problem with Superman and Clark Kent, is it will never work in live action. So unless people sit down and read the Superman comics that they claim are boring, even though they've never read one, then they won't understand the whole.
Is he putting the mind whammy on them?
Hey, I get it. It works for me. I'm a fan of Superman. I read the comics.
It touches a nerve with me because people say things like, oh, I don't want to read Superman. They say it's boring because what can he possibly do? He's basically a god. And it's like, how do you know it's boring? Have you ever read a Superman comic? Really? Ever? And most of the time, no, never. I read once
from the 70s when he was a jerk. Does that count?
You should, if you want to read Superman as a jerk, you should read Power of Ion. he's a dick in that.
Read the ones from the 90s where he's blue.
Oh, I remember that. And red.
The Death of Superman. The red one's like evil, right? Or I forget what the red one's deal is. What? The blue is Superman made out of energy. The red one's energy also, but he's a different energy. Evil energy? I don't know. Wow, we went off on it. That was a high quality tangent.
Yeah, we're doing good tonight on those. So anyway, yeah, resolution with Arnie.
Yeah.
Back to it.
Take two. No, I mean, it gets kind of dark. And it seems a little bit out of place. I mean, I agree with what they did. I mean, you can't fight that guy head on. And once you realize, oh, he's got a heart murmur. Well, this might just solve itself. Why not just make sure he doesn't get a chance to go kind of insane? Because I'm pretty sure, I know it's in the omnibus. I'm pretty sure it's in your guys' trades or whatever you're reading. The whole deal with Corkscrew going out into the woods. So X-Force has God damn it. Now that they're X-Statics, I can't stop calling them X-Force. Henry. So X-Statics, one of their jobs at least appears to be weeding out insane mutants so that they don't become villains, like Corkscrew, like Arnie. So, I mean, it makes sense, but it's just one of those things like, that's a little dark. Shit got real.
I appreciate it. I mean, if he's not going to go hang out with Professor Xavier, what the fuck are they supposed to do with him? He can overpower all of them, and he's going to kill people. He already has. Like,
also makes them be nice to each other.
They did the most reasonable thing they could have done in that situation.
And in a way, it's kind of like a make-a-wish. It's like, hey, you're going to be dead soon. Why don't you join the team for a little bit?
Sorry.
I don't know if I'd phrase it make-a-wish, but... But
sorry, go ahead, Andy.
I was going to say, I do believe this is the most humane way to, quote-unquote, dispose of him. Because they said he was going to die of it eventually anyway. It was going to be what killed him. So why not accelerate the process and spare a bunch of people by doing so? And if you're going to do it, make it good for him. I mean, it's one step short of buying him, like, a room full of hookers. For him, I mean, he died doing what he always wanted to do.
Room full of hookers. I mean, yeah, fighting villains.
Which, I mean, if you're gonna have to do it, I mean, they let him hang out with him for like a week.
A week of misery.
For them, it was misery, but for him, it was fucking wonderful. Like, it was great.
Yeah.
I mean, I just, because in the notes it says it's kind of dark what they do to him, but I really, I think it was a wonderful solution, and I think they were more humane than they should have been. I think if he's got a heart murmur and he's killing people, murder the fuck out of him. Because they did it to other people. When they go in and fight terrorists, they just murder the shit out of them. They don't worry about being humane. And Arnie's done just as fucked up kind of things as they did.
Yes.
Boom.
Knowledge. Or truth. Whatever you said. Yeah. I didn't, the one thing... I did not like the art for that last issue. I don't know who that guy was. I don't know what he's done since then. But I was just Who is something Pope. Paul Pope.
It wasn't on the whole, it wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
It just threw me off in the first couple of pages where it were close ups on people's faces. But it was like at odd angles and half on frame, half off, and it's like I could almost see that guy's nose hair. What the hell is this? Is this a Crimson King like cover? Like album cover? What the fuck is going on here? Oh, King Crimson, that was what it was.
Oh, God, King Crimson.
Do you know that album cover I'm talking about?
I don't know the one. I've thankfully never seen an album cover, but I know of the band, and I am not amused. But I'll say that for my King Crimson anti-metal podcast.
Okay.
Wasn't King Crimson like a prog rock band?
Yeah.
It's all the same.
Psychedelic prog rock.
I just remember, they were, wait, maybe I'm thinking the wrong ones. Are they the ones, every single thing they did was a rock opera?
Kind of.
Diamond. That is the wrong king.
Yeah, I think you're thinking of the wrong king.
I have the wrong monarch in my brain.
The only monarch in your brain should be the Mighty Monarch.
Minions!
We are crushing the tangent tonight.
I'm
going to
blame Arnie Lund for beaming that message into my brain.
So is his mom also crazy or just scared for her life? I couldn't quite figure that out.
For her life?
I mean, he was the whole, like, to me, it was like that episode of The Twilight Zone.
Oh.
Well, there's a Treehouse of Horrors, too, right? Isn't there a Treehouse of Horrors episode?
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of. I realized they just did a Twilight Zone episode.
But that's Twilight Zone, yeah. I mean, it's definitely that kind of take where instead of sending people out into the cornfield or whatever that kid did.
Turned them into dogs with heads.
Yeah, or crushed their fingers.
Oh God, that was so fucked. And then the mom goes over and says, "You've already crushed his trachea and destroyed his eardrums or something." It's like, oh, the poor fucking guy.
He shouldn't have been nice, or should have been nice. And then she gives him cookies. So, yeah.
I think she was terrified of him. I mean, the art kind of
did not portray
her as happy. Yeah.
Her face was always nervous looking.
Yeah.
Always. But I couldn't ever figure out if that was because she had, like, snapped a while back, or if she
or
was, like...
Stepford wife kind of smile.
Yeah, like that
is,
kind of thing.
I think she would have encouraged him if she had really snapped, whereas here, she's trying to undo the damage to the best of her ability.
Yeah, that's true. She hasn't gone reek.
And as much as, as much as she is scared of him, she, you know, it seems like she genuinely cares for her son, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. She's more like Cersei. No.
More like Catelyn.
We never met her, the dad, so she could be very much like Cersei.
Yeah.
Actually, we never did meet the... Hey, speaking of Simpsons, you notice all the gravestones?
Yes, that was great.
Yeah, that's a nice little touch. Every now and again, they just put something in there in the background.
I was like, does that say Sislak and Simpson?
Yeah.
And
oh, Sislak. Oh, I'm being an idiot. Don't listen to me. I thought you were literally asking, did that say Sislak? I don't know who that is. I'm like, you're not a fan.
Oh, no, I am. I have played so much Simpsons Tapped Out. Oh, dear God.
Oh, yeah. I have seen that on your iPad many a time.
Yep. Yeah. Definition of obsession. I was actually playing it earlier this episode while we were recording.
So would you say you are a fanboy? Would you relish the opportunity to become a Simpson and then have them murder you?
Only if I could be mysterious.
You get to wear your own little costume.
Clunky. What else happened in this? All I can think of that happened in this was Venus de Milo and Arnie.
Yeah, you know, well, in the last issue, the orphan quits.
Oh, yeah. No, he doesn't quit.
Well, he says quits.
He'll be back next.
We get the Adventures of Duke with Corkscrew in that nice little Blair Witch Project inspired thing. That's in the trade, right? They didn't take that out?
I think they did take that out.
I don't recall that part.
Oh!
I did not see that.
Oh my god! I read the issues on...
I read them on Marvel the movie, but on
same
the...
Here.
On the, on the, like, I looked up what's, in, like, collected in the Good Omens trade, and it's not in there. It's just X-Statics 1-5.
Let me tell you the most fantastic thing ever. I will explain this entire thing. It's a short little, like, 8-page one-shot by Darwin Cook. Drawn by Darwin Cook, written by whatever. And it's right after the recruitment thing. You know, they say, that whole figure out which way it's
fighting out in the desert and accidentally kills a guy.
it show that it's Dupe and Corkscrew, and they're in the woods together. They're having a grand old adventure, and Corkscrew thinks he's going through some special training, and they just have a nice little adventure, and he starts to go slightly more crazy, slaughters a whole bunch of horses, and then Dupe just kind of stares at him, and the next panel is him chopping up Corkscrew with an axe, and then smiling into the camera, and scene. It was, in a way, the funny, like, a little bit touching, because there is a bit, it's like, oh, I'm sorry, Dupe, I didn't mean to kill all those horses, they were just making fun of me. It's just like, you're insane. And then just, you see, just an axe behind his back, it's like, well, I know how this is going to end. Oh, that's sad, they didn't include that.
Yeah, I'll go look that up. Yeah, because when I searched on Marvel Unlimited for X-Statics, it came up, I think.
Yeah.
It comes up as, like, Corkscrew and Dupe. And at first, I was like, what the fuck is this? I'm not reading that. That's not part of our collection.
Ugh.
But now, you have to understand, Nick, after reading this, the thing I want to do tomorrow is run out and not read more X-Statics. As much as I'm enjoying reading this.
I can't blame you.
I want to run out and read everything with Dupe in the title.
Which, unfortunately, is only, what, 4 right now? You got Wolverine and Dupe 1 and 2, and then you got the 2 of all new Dupe, and that's just, unfortunately.
Just because whenever Dupe comes up, it seems to be, like, a whole lot of, what the fuck?
Isn't he
the Nuff Said issue last week.
Isn't he in new X-Men, or what? I don't know what they're calling it, Astonishing, Amazing, Fantastic, Super?
He's in Wolverine and the X-Men.
Yeah, okay.
He's one of the teachers at the Jean Grey School of Gifted Mutants or something.
What does he teach? Just how to float?
Well, I don't know. So there's, I remember metaphysics. Reading, there's one issue. There's one issue where he's a substitute for Kitty Pryde's class, which is Introduction to Religion.
That's perfect. I was going to say art history.
He just shows them videos and sleeps.
Oh, okay. That sounds right, too, when you get right down to it.
I was going to say art history, because apparently he's full of classic art.
Maybe he just shows them old episodes of the X-Statics reality show.
Oh my god, that would be great.
This is what we used to do back when we were fun. Actually, I don't know. I shouldn't say that. I don't know if X-Men's fun or not anymore.
Well, we've read Wolverine and the X-Men, I think. It was good.
That's a ringing endorsement. That'll fit on the back of a trade paperback. It was ellipsis. Good? Question mark?
You gotta understand, we've read a lot of comics for this show, Nick.
That's true.
And all things in perspective, if you like X-Men at all, Wolverine and the X-Men is really pretty good, and you should go out and read it if you like X-Men and mutants and the whole school thing. For that, it's great.
I loved the X-Men, I think, when I was the exact right age to love X-Men. That's like 10, 11, 12. And I read and owned pretty much up through whenever Scott and Jean got married, and then for some reason I just like missed an issue. I'm just like, I'm good. And then, like, anytime I try and get back in, it's time travel this, time travel that. 75 Icemen come together into a room, and I'm just like, I have no idea what's going on. That's part of the reason why I like this X-Force, X-Tax, whatever, because it's over and done. There's no more. That's it. You don't have to deal with the whole, we're going into the future now. It's like, nope, everyone's dead. It's over.
Well, and I appreciate that this is also not like, even the future stuff accepted, the Phoenix Force is never going to come to any of these people. I like that as much as these are X-Men, and as much as this is, like, fantastical and satirical and all these kinds of things, it's also not, it doesn't hit a lot of the, like, cape comic eye-rolling things. And none of these characters are ever going to come back to life. There's never going to be a retcon for these characters that, like, I mean, there's the fat retcon, but it's not like a Jean Grey, I was alive the whole time, and that was a fake Jean Grey Phoenix thing.
I was in a pod at the bottom of the bay for 30 years or something.
And the wonderful thing, I think that happens in this because none of these characters are really that important. None of these characters matter that much, even to this story.
Yeah.
If the orphan really did leave and we never see him again in the entire run of X-Statics, all right. I mean,
they would get a new person.
They'd get a new person.
More room for Tyke. There you go.
Yeah. And like if Tyke Alucard died next week, like, I mean, maybe it's because they set up the comic from the very beginning by murdering the entire team twice, basically. Like, maybe because of that, but there's no attachment to these characters. And that's what feels really good when you read this comic, is you're freed from all of the weight that normally comes with Cape Comics. And you can just read this and enjoy it and have fun with it. And And the only other comic that used to be like that for me was Justice League International. And ever since Prelude to Crisis, where they killed Ted.
Oh, Blue Beetle? Yeah.
Yeah. Ever since then, I can't go back and read the old ones with the same just abandon and joy that I used to. Because now there's like, oh, they killed this guy that I'm loving right now. But in here, I wouldn't care if they killed somebody. But this is the first comic I've read in a long time that has that just lack of weight. And you can just like read it for fun. Mm. It's great.
Well, I mean, it has a different kind of weight, right?
Yeah, yeah. If, but I mean,
it's not like heavy-handed. You know, it's not, I say this like every couple issues, it's not dark and gritty, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe
I mean, we mentioned this back when we did the first trade. It's reminiscent of Next Wave.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a really fun comic, and you do become invested in the characters, but not in the same way that you would in something like a normal X-Men comic, you know?
Yeah, you get attached, but you're not going to write an angry letter to the editor when one of these characters dies.
Right.
Yeah. Which, yeah. You know, thinking about it even more as like we're talking out my thoughts on why I'm really liking this comic as I read it, even though I don't have as much... I think it's because it's definitely set in the Marvel Universe. It's set in the 616. And you know it is. And, you know, the mood, a lot of things feel like, okay, it's in the 616. But it doesn't have the burden of continuity.
Mm.
So they can just kill off people. And I don't, if I like somebody, I don't have to be like, oh, I should go back and read all 200 issues with the Anarchist. You know, there's none of that to this. It just... Because I think you're right, David. It's not that the comic doesn't have weight. It's not that the comic doesn't have its own heaviness to it. Because we've been over-intellectualizing this for 3 weeks now.
Maybe weight is the wrong word. Maybe it's more substance.
As like more chutzpah.
Yeah. I read this and there's nothing dragging down my experience of reading it. There's like nothing at all dragging me down. And if ever something feels like it is, I can just let it go because... They might die next week.
Like, don't you, in a way, towards the end, you just kind of hope, maybe Orphan will die now.
Yeah, and I'm fine with it. If he does, cool. All right, whatever. I'm just along for the ride, and it feels good.
Yeah.
So I guess, do we want to just get around to wrapping it up and rating it? And we can rate this one trade, and since this is the first time we've really done, like, the first three trades in a row of a series, I think we've done, like, half of the omnibus, right?
Yeah, I think they only went to, like, 19, I think, in the, yeah, so you...
So really, we're not that far away from having read the whole
thing. They went to 26? Huh!
But we've read 116 to 129, was that 13 plus... Wait. Five. So we've read 18 issues, and there's 20 something left. Yeah, so we're almost halfway.
How many more like paper trades did they make? Because it looks like they only made those three trades.
I don't know. I don't have the trades up in front of me, but we don't have that much left to go if we wanted to read all of it. So we can talk about this one trade in particular with Arnie and Venus de Milo. But then, if you guys want to, you can talk about like the whole run as you perceive it. And I'm especially interested in Nick's opinion, so long as he doesn't spoil a whole lot.
Oh, I very well may, but I'll try my best not to. Rosebud was his sled.
So
also a metaphor for his virginity.
What?
Oh my god. About it. So Nick, why don't you start?
Oh, I'm sorry. You wanted me to start.
I wasn't leading up to you starting.
No, that's good. That's good.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So this one, on its own, the first five issues of X-Tax proper, I actually kind of, I mean, I love the whole series, but it starts to. This is the point to me, at least, where it starts to go, starts trending downwards, and I think it's partly due to the fact that now they have their own comic. Like when they're just like, oh, we'll just finish off X-Force for you guys. And you let us do whatever we want to do. We're going to just have fun with it. And so that's incredibly liberating. But then as soon as you get your own book, it's like, well, crap. Now we have to deal with fans' expectations. And all. It's kind of like the thing is, the worst thing you can do to a certain type of rebel is just tell them, you win. You're right. Comics are kind of weird. And people should die more often. So there you go. Do what you want to do.
Because they're not rebels anymore.
Yeah, it just kind of became a victim of its own success. And so from here on out, you kind of do get the feeling that they're just kind of like, well, where do we go now? Like, future arcs get really weird. Like, some of you have read the idea. It was originally called, fantastically enough, Die Another Day, where they bring Princess Diana as a X-Forcer. This was just shortly after her death. But the thing is, Marvel says, no, don't do that. You're not going to do that. And so they have to just very quickly come up with a brand new plot using the same art. And so it kind of, they just kind of ran out the joke, I felt. And you can sort of see it begin to get a little bit darker here and a little bit more, well, now we have to have long-term stories instead of just, we're going to kill them all. So, what am I doing? Oh, I'm reading the thing. Yes. Well, this, I give this one about a 3.5. I mean, it's okay. It is good. How do I want to put it? Even though I'm kind of dinging it a little bit, it's kind of just like dinging in comparison to the first run, the X-Force run, which was just joke a minute, joke a minute, joke a minute, and now it's kind of like joke, joke, angst, joke, joke, angst. Hmm. And it gets a little bit whatever, but you get good stuff too. Dead Girl has a thing later on that's absolutely fantastic, has one of my favorite jokes I've ever read, which I will, amazingly enough, not spoil. Yeah. And I won't actually spoil it, but the final issue is, as in its own words, it's downbeat yet surprisingly touching.
All right.
Oh, and if you get a chance, read Dead Girl, the miniseries.
All right. And I really do want to read that Dupe Corkscrew one.
Yeah. Oh, no, I'm really saddened and disappointed that that's not on the thing. That is
me too, because it sounds amazing.
Mm. I mean, as I said, it's only eight issues.
Eight pages.
And most of it, since it is dupe, it's just still frames, but with no dialogue.
Plus, I love Darwin Cook. He's amazing.
Yeah. Oh, he is. Did you ever read that's another discussion. I was going to say New Frontier, but don't worry about that.
Oh, that one's good, too. Yeah. We don't need another tangent. We're trying to wrap up.
Yeah.
So I'll actually go and go next, because I feel like I gave my little speech before we led into the ratings. So I feel like this trade as a whole feels really good to me right now. So I'm going to give this particular trade just a 3.5. I really do think the best of the three was last week. They got the heavy-handed satire out of the way in the first one. And then X-Force final chapter, they could keep the satire stuff in there. They could develop who they wanted to develop, kill whoever they didn't give a shit about. Like, it was really good and fluid, and a lot of good stuff happened in the last trade. And this one does feel more structured. It does feel more like, all right, we got the orphan. He's got this problem. He's got to deal with it. We got to bring in another character, though. They need a transporter. Like, now that you've talked about it, Nick, I really do see what you mean by starting to get saddled with the problems that come with having your own run. Like, you have to manage it in such a way, like, you can't go six issues without, like, you can't go six issues of constantly getting another replacement. Eventually, you have to have a storyline where things happen and you develop characters. You can't just keep giving briefs. But, I mean, the run on a whole, everything I said before, I really do like this. And I really do want to finish reading the X-Statics run, because even if it starts to feel weighted down, it's only its own weight. It only has its own baggage. Like, whenever we read Batman, God, I come to the experience with so much baggage. You know, whenever we read an X book that has Wolverine in it, I, as the reader, come to the comic with so much baggage. And it's nice to be able to read a comic where there's literally not a single character that I have any preconceptions or baggage about. It's nice. It's nice to have new characters. It's really, really nice. It's something I love a lot. And it's something I loved about Final Chapter, when they were just introducing people and killing them off willy-nilly. So on the whole, I want to give Peter Milligan and Mike Allred a 4, 4.5 for this whole X-Force, X-Static thing. Especially Mike Allred. Man, what did we just read something else with him. What was it?
I think you guys said it was Fantastic Four?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, FF. That's great.
Final Fantasy?
Foundation.
That's the first thing I had ever read drawn by Mike Allred, and this is also amazing. And he's on my list of artists that I really, really like and just want to pick up stuff whenever it comes on the shelf. It's like him, Phil Noto, Darwin Cook, like, if I see something about them now, I'm just going to pick it up and try it, including all new dupe.
A nice little fun fact that Darwin Cook and Mike Allred became best friends through this, apparently.
Ah, that's great. Because Darwin Cook's a cool dude, too. So if they become friends, then it helps my soul know that Mike Allred is also a good dude, and I don't mind supporting him as a person by buying his comics.
Well, now you're going to find out he murdered like six kids or something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, I'm not always the best judge of character.
Well, as long as those kids were unstable jerks. Killer mutants, it's okay.
Yeah.
And as long as he died by... As long as he killed them by putting them in a room full of hookers. speaking of room full of hookers, David, you want to go next?
Oh, man, I thought that was going to be a lead-in to Jen, but you totally caught me off guard there. So, yeah.
I was talking about my bachelor party.
Even though you surprised me, I will go next. I'm going to keep my theme going and give this a 3.5 and also give the entire run a 3.5. I did really enjoy both the X-Force books and the X-Statics one. And like you, Andy, I'm going to read the rest of this because it's a good comic and it's fun and it's different from the stuff that I pick up every week. You know, the monthly comics that I still collect, because it doesn't have the baggage. And as much as I love continuity, I'm one of those people who just I have to know all the characters' backgrounds, and then I have to figure out where the retcons are, just so I can like organize everything in my head. And you know, that is a big turnoff to some people, and it is a daunting task, but it's something that I love. And this comic is kind of the opposite of that, and it is kind of refreshing to not have to wonder if the orphan's dad was actually kidnapped by the Shi'ar and he's in space living as a pirate, and, you know.
That's not going to happen in this one. You're right, Andy. No one's going to secretly have space pirate parents.
Yeah.
But
so anyway,
that'd be fine. It'd still be like, okay, never mind. Go.
I guess that would be pretty funny if he had the exact same like parental thing going on at Cyclops. But anyways, I like this comic and I think it's good. I would definitely recommend this to other people. It's not like a perfect comic, so it's not a 5, but I think 3.5 is a good score. So yeah, I think this was this was a good series, good trade, and I'm gonna read the rest of it. Yep.
Okay. I wonder who will go next.
A room full of hookers.
Oh, Jen.
I'll go. So, I actually thought that this was not as good as last week's. Like, this X-Statics, like, these first 5 issues kind of tapered off. I felt like the trade ended kind of abruptly, like, not very much happened, I guess. Mm. I'll give this week a 3. It was all right. I also had, like, trouble just kind of leading into the comic because the start of it was so unpleasant for unpleasantness's sake.
Yeah.
But which I did really like last week.
Worst thing for you.
Yeah. But you know, it's like David said, that there's not going to be any really stupid twists or turns. This is just what it is, and that's a definite high point. Overall, like from what we've read of these 3 trades, I would say 3.5.
Okay.
So, I mean, we all rated this comic positively.
Yeah.
Yay!
So, good job. Good job, Peter Milligan and Mike Allred. With some help from Darwin Cook, you have our seal of approval. I know you've been craving that for many years since this comic came out. I'm glad we could provide you that satisfaction. Good night.
I hope you dropped the mic right there. You just took off your headphones and just dropped it.
I'm going to actually mute David when he does. Whether he wants to run. No, I'm not.
That means we can talk about him behind his back, right?
Yeah, but he'll be able to hear it.
Oh, that's fine. He met me one time.
To you. So anyway, that wraps up our X stuff. It really should have just been an X-Statics arc, but we tacked on Old Man Logan because we needed a filler week, so there's that. Thank you, Nick, for filling in for 3 weeks.
You're welcome. That was fun.
Filling in even though we didn't have
the thunder.
You did.
At no point did I stoop to doing shout-outs. That's good.
I mean, if you want to, you can at the end.
I'd like to take a shout-out to the Wu-Tang Clan. Protect your neck.
The RZA, the JZA.
Mm-hmm. Inspector Deck, ODB, rest in peace.
Ghostface Killer.
Oh my god, David, you're my favorite person now.
I love Wu-Tang.
They are, in fact, nothing to fuck with.
No.
No.
Not at all.
No.
Okay, if you two can come up with the topic for a podcast, I will produce it. You two can just record it on Skype and send me the MP3 file and I will produce it.
We'll just
and
talk
I will publish it. I will build you a website and everything. It'll be a thing. It'll be a whole thing. Please. Anyway, so next week we're going to start an Image comic series because we had a listener request.
What?
Holy fucking shit. So I've been kind of wanting to do some Image comics for a while, but we got a listener request for an Image comic, so it's going to spur on a whole Image arc. We're going to start off with the listener request, which is Pretty Deadly, collecting issues 1-5 of Pretty Deadly by Kelly Sue DeConnick.
Ooh, that sounds pretty good.
Yeah, because Kelly Sue DeConnick is awesome.
Yes, she is.
Have we read any Kelly Sue DeConnick yet?
No,
I feel like we haven't.
Yeah,
we've read her husband multiple times.
Yeah, multiple times. But we'll have to sprinkle some more of her in, maybe after that one. And then after that, we're going to read Peter Panzerfaust, which collects issues 1-5 of Peter Panzerfaust, written by Curtis J. Curtis J. Weibe.
You just offended him 3 times. I'm sure his name is pronounced completely different.
I think it's Weibe. I don't know. But we're reading that because it's an Image comic. It's very well critically received, and they're turning it into an animated cartoon with voice work by Summer Glau. So we're going to read that.
All right, that explains everything.
And then we're going to wrap it up with something I've been meaning to do for a long, long time, and I don't know why. I've never put it on the list before. So we're going to do Chew, collecting issues 1-5 of Chew, written by John Layman. And Chew is also very well critically acclaimed, and I've read like the first 3 issues, and oh man, they're great. They're really good. So that's what we got coming up the next 3 weeks. If you want to know what series we have coming up after that, go to our website, www.apsupercast.com. On the right, there's a button that says Future Show. Click on it, and you have our reading list coming up. You can read along. Please read along. It makes it a lot easier. If you just listen to this without having read what we read, it would probably suck. But thanks for listening, or at least downloading every week. I don't know. Thanks. Whatever. And if you have a suggestion for something for us to read, because we do listen to listener requests, and we will read almost whatever the fuck you want us to, as evidenced by next week, because I have no idea what Pretty Deadly is, and I'm just going to read it because somebody told me to. If you have a suggestion, send us an email at
AtomicPoweredSupercast@gmail.com.
Or if email's not your thing, we have all of the social media stuff. Facebook.com/APSupercast, Twitter.com/APSupercast, and APSupercast.tumblr.com, where I have posted pictures of all kinds of neat things. And as always, please subscribe to us on
iTunes.
Yeah. All right, everybody. Until next week, goodbye.
Bye. Thank you. This was fun.
Good. I'm glad you enjoyed it.